This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
How precarious. Our whole economy is on certain things. We got this narrow channel that goes from the Red Sea up to the Mediterranean that cuts something like 9,000 nautical miles out of a shipping journey and saves, you know, gazillions of dollars. And how that one ship getting caught in a sandstorm, high winds, and some other malfunctions, which they haven't yet determined, blocks it, and how that can mess with the whole world economy. Pretty interesting how precarious we are, which is why we need a service such as Matt Graham offers today and has been for a while. And I love the service. So you're not stuck, thankfully. And it doesn't look like Les's prediction that, well, maybe not, the word hasn't gotten out yet that the ship is free, because I'm looking at what's going on in the 10-year, my friend, and it's a mess.
Yeah. I think we saw a reaction in oil, but bonds ended up going the other way. And, you know, to Les's credit, it's an input, right? And that input is going to have its effect, but there are other bigger inputs this morning, particularly. And the weird thing is, you know, you don't normally think about bonds and rates in terms of the stock market, the 9:30 a.m. NYSE opening bell type of thing. But a lot of times we do see pretty big moves right at 9:30 because, you know, A, markets are interconnected, and B, there are vastly more ETFs that include bond components that start trading at 9:30 a.m. And as those get fired up for the day, it can create big trading needs in those, as well as just simple asset allocation stuff, especially at the end of the month, especially at the end of a quarter. And March has been an interesting month and quarter for those sorts of compulsory behind-the-scenes trades, which I think we talked about last time. But yeah, you know, we're adding global satellite boat tracking to MBS Live now, you know, just to try to stay current with the time.
There's another new screen coming on. That's hilarious.
Exactly.
I was watching some videos, but there are videos out there that track where every boat is out there, and it shows you where our warships are. And it shows you where our the shipping lanes are, how much. I mean, it was insightful. Called our attention to just how many boats are out there. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can even key in a certain code to your electronics so that any other boat that's on the water can see where you are at any given time.
And that's amazing.
There are a lot more boats out there than people realize.
But,
The Suez is interesting. I had a friend come through the Suez Canal after buying a boat on the East Coast, and he said it was like one of the craziest experiences of his life. Sounded
oh, really?
Fun,
yeah.
His
yeah.
wasn't quite wide enough to block the whole thing.
There may be some out there. But another thing, I'm looking at Fed Waller saying that central bank isn't keeping rates low for financing government debt. But you've got some great stuff. I love your news, live news stream on here, but we could talk about this. But tell us what's going on. What are we going to hear this week?
Yeah, let's get into it. So real quick, getting caught up with last week. First, I'll do a quick rundown of the data. Markets aren't super tuned into the data right now, but some of it is interesting nonetheless. Existing home sales on Monday, a little bit weaker than expected, still very high relatively and a lot higher than people thought they'd be right now. 6.22 million versus 6.5 forecast. Next day, new sales fell 18.2%, and they were expected to fall 6.5%. So a bit more of a contraction than normal. People were talking about the weather. People were talking about the fact that new home sales, a historically volatile report and it's prone to revision. So we'll see what changes there in the next revision. Case in point, the next morning, MBA purchase applications rose, you know, by a moderate amount, but nonetheless higher. So indicating that, you know, the purchase market definitely isn't dead. And the refi volume ticked down about as much as you'd expect given the recent rise in rates, but it's still at pretty decent levels. Durable goods, big miss, minus 1.1 versus a forecast of 0.8 rather. And really no reaction in the bond market. In fact, bonds started selling off after that, which was notable because you'd normally expect bonds to improve after a weaker durable goods report. That was our first clue that the week might be moving in a direction we didn't necessarily love, because at the beginning of the week, there were high hopes that we were seeing consolidation after what has been a fairly rapid rate spike, historically large, not the biggest we've ever seen, but in a league of very big sell-offs. And to see bonds moving higher in yield after weaker economic data is a little bit spooky when you're looking for that sort of correction. Now, it was an auction cycle week, meaning Treasury had their scheduled note auctions, last week being 2, 5, and 7 year. Wednesday was the 5 year auction. That's generally the biggest ticket of the week in terms of that auction cycle. And it's not uncommon for investors to build in what's called a concession, simply meaning they're pushing prices lower in order to facilitate easier bidding at the auction process, or prices are falling because they're planning on buying later in the day, and so they're not buying in the morning. Either way, that 5 year could have been that 5 year auction could have been the reason for a little bit of weakness on Wednesday. And yields began to rise, yields fell after the 5 year auction, because it was a fairly decent auction. So yields were rising in the morning, falling in the afternoon. The next day, though, 7 year Treasury auction, which hasn't ever really been a huge market mover other than the most recent one, yet again for the second month in a row, really, really horrible 7 year auction. This one was not nearly as bad as the last one, but bad enough to push yields higher. And then it has just been an uptrend since then, carried through Friday, carried through the beginning of the week, and really reinforced that it's not going to be an easy or fast process for rates to correct and go back where they came from. And what we were looking for from a technical standpoint was a break below 1.62 in terms of 10-year yields. We accomplished that on Wednesday and needed confirmation on Thursday. Confirmation can vary depending on who you ask, but I like to see yields hold below a technical level for at least 2 consecutive days, and they were not able to do that on Thursday. So now back around 1.7, more weakness this morning, not data-driven. In fact, we don't even have any relevant economic data yet this week. That will start tomorrow. We have home prices, not a big market mover, but interesting to the housing and mortgage market. Expected up more than 10% yet again, year over year. Consumer confidence expected up big, 96.9 versus 91.3 previously. Wednesday's biggest ticket would be Chicago PMI, seen coming in at 60.7. And keep in mind, Dave, when we're talking about these PMI reports, listeners should know that generally speaking, the PMI stuff is all based around an index value of 50 to 52 being sort of economically neutral. And anything higher than 52, because you subtract out 2 points for average inflation, I guess, speaks to economic expansion. And so Chicago PMI coming in at 60.7 would be a very healthy pace of expansion.
Good number,
Thursday, jobless claims seen down at 680 versus 684 previously. And that was pretty close to where it came in last week, for that matter. ISM manufacturing, hey, speaking of manufacturing PMI, also seen at 61.3, so balmy manufacturing growth. And construction spending seen down a little bit after rising last month, not a big market mover. Then Friday, the biggie, NFP, the big jobs report. They are forecasting a substantial increase up to 639,000 new jobs from 379 last time. So that would be a big increase, but it is actually even more interesting by the time you look at the average work week, which is coming in at 34.7 hours a week. And that doesn't sound like a big number for those of us that work 60 hours a week or, you know, plus or minus 10 hours, but the work week tends to average 34.5 hours over the past decade, give or take.
Yeah.
So big increases in that are, you know, a 0.1 hour increase is notable. So being up at 34.7 would be like an extra 100,000 jobs added to the economy if we were still at 4.5 hours. So if the work week does tick up, it just is going to speak to extra pent-up slack in the labor market, more potential jobs coming back into the market when people are better able to return to work. It really tells us if that thing does go up to 34.7 and jobs increase, it really tells us that employers are looking for more people to come back to work. And those people may be waiting in the wings to come back to work when their kids get back in school or when they're feeling more confident about COVID, or whether that means vaccinations or whatnot. Either way, it suggests, hey, maybe the labor market recovery could be a little bit better than some of the economic bears expect it to be. And last but not least, as part of that jobs report, economists are seeing unemployment rate falling to 6.0 from 6.2. So if all of these things coincide on Friday, I think we could see the first instance of a jobs report really having a meaningful impact on the bond market, although that has not been the trend recently.
Yeah. All putting potential upward pressure on everything.
Good. You got it.
Yep. Yeah, that's not what we want. The companies that focus on the purchase volume, their business, the pipelines are still doing well. I mean, we got great stuff. We got housing supply issues. That's a whole nother thing.
We need some inventory. That's for sure.
We definitely need some inventory. You did such a good job. I love your screen, and I love the fact that you give our listeners the LOL code, Lincoln and Lending code. You double the free trial without a credit card requirement. And so I think the number of people that I got hooked on this as a result of you joining the podcast, I mean, I keep hearing about it. Lincoln, I love this. I turned it on. I don't understand. And they go, and so people are signing up and getting encouraged. So check it out. Be sure to do so, Matt. Appreciate the report each and every week. You have a great week. If we don't talk to you beforehand, happy Easter. Good Friday.
Yeah.
Got a short day on Friday and markets close early. You're gonna take
you
some
too.
Time.
Happy
off.
Easter, Dave. Yeah. Market closure on I don't see it on Monday, but we do have an early close on Friday.
Yeah, good. I mean, I meant Friday. If I said Monday, my bad. But anyway, Matt, appreciate you, friend. Yeah. You do a great job.
Have a good rest of your week.
You betcha, friend. Too appreciate it. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors. Finastra, as well as CMLA, Indicom, Accelerate Mobility, Mortgage Markets Intelligence, as well as Modex, as well as the MBA, Knowledge Scoop, Lenders One, and Mortgage Collaborative. Folks, so good to have you being here with us. Tell others about the podcast. There's a lot of information we cover here, and you won't go wrong, and you can just share it and listen to it in a passive way when you're coming and going. You'll be amazed how it'll help your career. Thanks so much for being with us. Have a great week, everybody, and look forward to talking with you soon.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.